Chapter 3. Leaving the idyllic vacation world of Tomaran behind, we jumped away to launch the Merry Band of Pirates Galactic Ass-Kicking Tour. Really, we had t-shirts and coffee mugs with the logo. It was... No, you can't buy the t-shirts, you had to be there. Okay, sure, there are probably secondhand shirts available on eBay or somewhere. No, I'm not going to wait while you log in. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh yeah, we were off to kick some ass. Also, to kiss some ass, if you want the truth. Why, when we had a stash of freaking elder weapons, did we need to kiss anyone's ass? Because we want humanity to have a future in the galaxy and not just be confined to one planet. That's it. We controlled one planet. Paradise doesn't count. To spread beyond one planet, we had two options: fight for habitable worlds, or work with allies for our mutual benefit. In the long term, it was better to have allies. One thing I had learned since that fateful Columbus Day was you never know what is going to happen, so you need to be prepared for anything. Especially, be prepared for the unexpected. The key was the long-term part of the equation. Long-term means a long time, like thousands of years, hundreds of thousands, millions maybe. One thing I know is that Joe Bishop is not going to be around in the long term. I mean, that guy is a jerk. He is bound to piss off someone and get a well-deserved beatdown, right? Or being a stupid monkey, he will probably stick a fork in a light socket and kill himself. What about Skippy? He will protect us, right? Shmaybe. Sure, he should be around for a long time, but our experience had proven that he also might do something stupid and get himself killed, or lose the awesomeness abilities that make him special. Hell, at some point the wacky antics of monkeys might cease to amuse him, and he could decide that some other species would be more fun to abuse. Or he could simply become fascinated by investigating some nerdnik thing, like the density of various hydrogen isotopes outside the galaxy, and forget that humans exist. He is incredibly absent-minded. Skippy could theoretically live forever, or until the last star in the universe became a cold, dark lump of whatever stars became when they burned all their fuel. No, I do not expect humans will be drinking beer and watching football at the end of the universe, although I think we can all agree that if humans are still watching football then, they will be drinking beer. Also, there should be nachos. My point is, the continued survival of humanity should not depend on any one thing, like an unreliable and absent-minded AI. So, we needed to plan on humans becoming a major player in the galaxy, and that means we need to work with the species that already live out there. Well, we need to try to work with some of the star-faring species. Some of them just desperately need a serious ass-kicking. The first stop on our tour was a place we had visited recently enough that the floors were still sticky, and there were crushed soda cups and popcorn on the floor. Plus, there was probably other stuff on the floor of an unsavory or illegal nature that I will not mention. The last time we were there, we rocked the house, and there were still fireworks lighting off in the parking lot. Okay, the fireworks were actually chunks of a Theranian starship that was falling out of orbit, but that burning debris looked like fireworks. It was heartwarming to think that among the pieces of metal and composite creating bright streaks as they fell through the atmosphere, some of those pretty fiery trails might be the corpse of a hateful cyborg asshole. It's the little things in life that make it really special. Sadly, due to a screw-up by our idiot tour manager, the roadie's bus got delayed and we arrived at Riker's without advance notice. That is why there were no reporters or groupies waiting when we jumped in. I was bitterly disappointed about the lack of groupies. What we did find waiting for us was a squadron of six starships. They were not actually waiting for us, since our public relations team had failed to notify anyone. Instead of groupies, we found a Theranian battlecruiser with a destroyer squadron, plus a Maxalt's light cruiser. In the spirit of fostering future interspecies cooperation, we jumped in close to the Maxalt's cruiser and immediately trapped all six ships in a damping field. At first, the Theranian ships did not know what to do. According to their treaties with the Maxalts, the little green pinheads were supposed to come to the aid of their patrons, even at the expense of their miserable lives. If they jumped away to save themselves from the fearsome ghost ship and the Maxalts survived, their people would pay a terrible price for the cowardice of those five ships. Also, the Theranan commander had to be thinking they should stick around to get into the fight, hoping the Maxalt ship damaged us badly enough that the cyborgs could sweep in for the kill and claim all the credit. Before I could contact the kiddies and go into my song and dance routine about how there was a new sheriff in town, they hit us with everything they had. Valkyrie absorbed the hits. And maybe I should have been understanding that the enemy commander was just reacting to a sudden and unexpected threat. Unfortunately for that ship, I was not in the mood to take any shit, so Valkyrie's big guns pounded that little cruiser to scrap. My actions were not based entirely on raw emotion. We were there for a purpose unrelated to either the Maxalks or Theranan, and could not allow them to get in our way. We also could not allow any of those ships to jump away and bring in reinforcements, because we had a tour schedule, and we did not have time for any nonsense. So, after the Theranan saw their patron ship become a loose collection of glowing scrap, they turned tail and burned hard, for about 15 seconds. That's how long it took for them to get my message that they were to cut thrust, safe their weapons, drop their shields, and generally cease and desist any futile bullshit, or we would be quite happy to use their little squadron as target practice. They ceased and desisted forthwith, or whatever fancy legal term you want to use. With the Theranan taken care of for the moment, we turned our attention to the main event. You might say that blowing up a senior species warship was our warm-up act, in which case we had a totally kick-ass warm-up act. Speaking of kicking ass, "Bilby," I said, standing up out of the command chair, "connect me with the asswipe in charge of this place."
"Sure thing, Colonel dude. The guy's name is..."
"I don't care about his name. Our relationship won't last long enough for us to become drinking buddies."
"Gotcha. Okay, he's ready to talk. Audio only or video also?"
"Video. We want this asshole to see us." If I wasn't boiling over with anger, it would have been funny. On the main holographic display appeared a lizard, rather more gaudily dressed than the typical minor clan leader of a backwater planet. Seeing his formal outfit told me two things. He had been dressed up to impress the Theranan or the Maxalks or both, and he was overdressed to compensate for the fact that he was not important at all. Since Skippy's strike, when he freed me from the hospital, also took out the previous clan leadership of the planet, this asshole was new to the job, and probably trying to keep his head attached to his neck by impressing his own people. I had news for him. Seeing a flashy outfit only got me more pissed off. The part that would have been funny was his facial expression. Kristang are bipedal, like humans, and despite the stereotype are not really lizards, they are warm-blooded like us. Also like us, they have two eyes, ears on either side of their heads, a mouth at the bottom of their faces, and a nose above the mouth. Given those features, it is not really surprising that their body language, especially facial expressions, could be recognized by humans. For example, when the video first came on, his eyes were slightly narrowed, his lips drawn into a tight line, and the skin flaps above his eyes were down. An expression of fear. That made sense. He had just seen the much-feared ghost ship, Scourge of the Galaxy, jump in and hammer a Maxalt ship to scrap. Back when Valkyrie was disabled and a Theranan frigate jumped in to identify us, word that the ghost ship had been sighted near Rakesh Dewalin must have reached the Kristang on that world. The arrival of our ship must therefore have been a surprise, but not a complete shock. The lizards must have been asking themselves why the rogue ship of Boss Farrakh had flown a killer warship to the unimportant little world, but their primary emotion had to be fear rather than curiosity. That changed the instant he saw me. Thinking about it later, it was funny how his expression changed from fear to another universal thought. What the fuck? "Yeah, it's me," I announced. "Us. Humans. We are flying the ghost ship." He said something, clearly sputtering from the greatest shock of his life. We didn't hear him as I had the sound muted.
"Shut your mouth!"
He didn't comply, which was probably understandable. I was not in an understanding mood. "Hey, shithead, I said, shut your mouth!" Again, he sputtered at me, waving his hands. In addition to shock, there was now fear again on his face, plus anger. A lowly human was daring to give orders to him. To get his full attention, I held up an index finger and crooked it up and down in a signal to the crew at Valkyrie's weapons station. They knew what I wanted. Railguns spat out projectiles, and seconds later, a target on the surface was obscured by an orange fireball, then a sooty black mushroom cloud rising up from the site. Not waiting for a battle damage assessment, I clapped my hands. Hey, shithead, do you need another demonstration? In case you missed a breaking news update, I'm the one with a starship in orbit. Stop talking. The Krestang warrior caste pride themselves on their bravery and discipline. In my experience, that is bullshit. Their bravery is really bravado. It's all for show. They talk a good game, and they are tough guys when beating up on the weak, but when someone pushes back, they run. Same with their discipline. It is fragile and easily broken. That explains why the asshole did not stop shouting at me, spit forming at the corners of his mouth, shaking his fists as he issued empty threats. Again, I raised a finger, and again, a target on the surface became a charred fountain of debris, pieces arcing out to fall over a wide area. Asshole kept shouting threats at me, until another lizard stepped into view from the right, raised a pistol, and blew asshole's head off. The body slumped down, the new figure wiped blood and other yucky stuff off his chest, and holstered his pistol. He turned toward wherever the camera is, pointed to his closed mouth, and nodded with his head bowed. The Krestang process for choosing new leaders may be exceptionally violent, but at least their public doesn't have to endure 2 years of debates, speeches, and primaries, so it has that going for it. Now we're getting somewhere, I said. I talk, you listen. You are going to learn this through official channels, I told the new local clan leader, though I did not know what the Krestang consider an official channel. Maybe they didn't have one. But I am giving you an exclusive news flash right now. Humans have been flying this ghost ship and attacking the Maxulks. Now, humans have elder weapons. His eyes bulged when I said that. To his credit, he kept his mouth shut. His instinct for outrage was overcome by his desire to know just what the hell was going on. That last part is important, so I will repeat it. We have elder weapons. There are now 3 apex species in the galaxy. Do not fuck with us. Don't even think about it. Whoever he was, he just nodded. My guess is he hoped that by complying with my order, he would survive to bring the shocking news to his leadership and so gain fame. Or maybe his leaders took a shoot-the-messenger approach to hearing bad news. Either way, I didn't care. Now that we have established the background, I will tell you why we are here, at your piece-of-shit planet. Do you see the image we're transmitting? I didn't wait for a reply. This is a little human girl. Her name is Aisha. She was taken from Earth, along with her mother and her older brother. And while she was here, she watched them die because of you. On the display, his lips were quivering. But if he was saying anything, he had the sound muted. We weren't there to listen to him. Really, it didn't matter whether he listened to us. The message was being broadcast all over and around the planet, including to the Theranan ships. We know you killed humans here. Civilians, including children. You killed them for sport and allowed them to suffer and die because of your neglect. I told you not to fuck with us in the future. That rule applies to the past also. We are not here to deliver a warning. We are here for payback. Turning toward the weapons console, I lowered my voice. Weps, I called the primary weapons officer. Fire mission. We wasted sights all over that world. The bombardment went on for 40 minutes. Any type of weapon installation or military facility was smashed into a smoking ruin. The official headquarters and residences of clan leadership became craters. Every aircraft, in the air or on the ground, we blew to hell. In general, we avoided causing even collateral damage to civilian areas. The exceptions were arenas where humans had been killed for sport or forced to fight. Those arenas were usually in the center of towns, so we used minimal force. But those sites all became craters. In one town, we hit the residence of a former clan leader who had staged 6 festivals during which humans were killed in the local arena, in particularly cruel spectacles. I will not give you the details on those festivals. It made me sick hearing about them. We hit that site, and Valkyrie flew on in low orbit as the planet rolled by below. Hey, Joe, Skippy called. What is it? I asked, distracted by the next set of targets coming into view. I just learned that the last clan leader was not at home when we destroyed his residence. He is in a sort of truck about 18 kilometers away. Sorry, I was fooled by the crappy sensors in his house. Besides, all those freaking lizards looked the same after a while. You know where he is now? Yes. Joe, there may be a complication. The truck is actually a sort of bus. It is filled with women and children who are not members of the warrior caste. They are servants and slaves. The clan leader is using them as living shields. Crap. We knew that once we started bombarding sites on the surface, the lizards would quickly figure out what type of structures and facilities were on our target list. A clan leader, seeing another leader's residences being struck by railgun darts, would get the hell out of his house. To prevent that, Skippy had jammed communications. His blanket squelching of transmissions worked for the most part, but there were line-of-sight laser links on the surface and buried cables, and he didn't know about all of them. The primitive nature of the planet's infrastructure and the chaotic settlement process meant that central authorities had poor records of local infrastructure, and local leaders were happy to keep the authorities clueless. It also meant that Skippy could not simply raid one database, infiltrate one network, and crash the whole communication system. So he missed a few things, and we had to adjust. Checking the map, I was puzzled. There were no other targets within the horizon from that clan leader's residence. It was his summer place, located in the middle of a vast hunting reserve. How did this jerk know we were coming for him? I'm not blaming you, Skippy. Just curious, so we know how to avoid it in the future. It was bad luck, Joe. I went over old message traffic. This jerk has an ongoing dispute with his older brother. We killed his brother about 10 minutes ago, but earlier in the day, the jerk tried to assassinate his older brother and failed. His leaving the house in a bus has nothing to do with us. He is trying to escape retaliation from his brother. Bad timing, that's all. We can't win them all. My adrenaline rush was fading as I watched site after site get hit. It would be nice to get this guy, but it's not worth deliberately killing innocent civilians. Keep an eye on him, but... Sir? Margaret Adams said from one of the sensor consoles. She had a catch in her voice. It alerted me that whatever she wanted to talk about, it brought up strong emotions for her. Gunny? She didn't take her eyes away from the console to look at me. Her shoulders were stiff and her voice unsteady. She spoke slowly to keep control of herself. The people who died in that clan leader's arena? Aisha. She took a breath. Her brother was one of them. Listen, I get it. I am a military officer. I had a responsibility to put the mission first and not let my personal feelings get in the way. The clan leader was one of many assholes who needed killing, all across the galaxy. The death of Aisha's brother was a tragedy, certainly, but he was also one of many people who were killed or died of starvation, disease, or neglect on that world. That's the problem with vengeance. It must have a scope, an end point. It can't go on forever, because you can't go on forever. So I get it. Adams was very emotionally invested in seeing that clan leader die. As the commander, I have to balance the... Oh, screw that. I looked around the bridge at all the faces staring back at me. That asshole is toast. The commandos could... Adams started to suggest. That would take too long. I did some quick math in my head. No, there I really did need to put the mission first. We had been hanging around in low orbit for too long already. A Maxulk's battle group, who hadn't yet gotten the message about humans being in the exclusive Elder Weapons Club, could jump in and hit Valkyrie. Plus, I was not tasking a commando team to kill one alien, especially without any planning or preparation. Skippy, can you cause an intermittent glitch in the engine of that bus? The bus is seriously an old piece of crap, Joe. It doesn't have much of an electronic brain I can hack into. Just answer the question, please, yes or no. Shmaybe? Let me try it. Okay. Yep, the engine just stalled. Now it's moving again. Joe, I can't do that many times without totally burning out the engine. Do that. Burn it out, but make it stop and start a couple times first. I want that jerk to think it's a flaw with the bus. If the engine just suddenly dies, he will get suspicious. Gotcha. Sir? Sims asked. Should we continue the bombardment? That bus will be over the horizon in 9 minutes. Glancing at the target list, I saw we were getting to the end. There wasn't anything really important remaining. Keep going, Exo. I want a clean sweep. Another question for you, Skippy. Can we use a missile submunition to take out one person in a crowd? One of Valkyrie's missiles? He asked, astonished. You realize the missiles in our magazines are designed for use against starship armor, right?
Hey, yeah, dudes, Bilby interrupted. That's true, but the Falcon dropships have air-to-ground weapons with cluster submunitions. I could dial down the yield or, like, set the warhead to inert and go for a kinetic kill, you know?
Great idea, Skippy scoffed. Except we don't have any Falcons in the air right now.
Bilby, I ordered, annoyed that Skippy was bullying the ship's control AI. Blow the doors to Dock and Bay Delta 6 and launch a missile from one of the Falcons there.
Like, now?
Right now.
This is cool. Somebody needs to...
Weapon authorized, Chen confirmed with the weapons console. Bilby had Skippy's restriction that he could not actually launch weapons. A human still had to press a button. Fox 1, she called, and a new symbol appeared on the display. The missile raced away and down toward the planet.
Hey, Colonel Dude, Bilby asked. Could I try guiding the submunition?
Do or do not. There is no try, Bilby.
Wow. Oh, wow, Bilby gasped. That is deep, like, that is wisdom, man.
Ugh, Skippy sighed. He is just quoting.
Skippy, shut up, please. I cut off his inevitable disgusted comment. Bilby, can you do it? Don't guess.
Yeah, man. I can do it. Piece of cake.
Skippy, what is Jerkface doing now?
Well, the bus is stopped. The motor burned out earlier than I expected. That bus is really a piece of crap.
Lizards are getting out of the bus now. I can't tell which one is... Oh, there he is, the tall one.
Interesting. He is alone.
Alone?
You said... Sorry, I meant there are no other members of the warrior caste with him. Not even a bodyguard. That confirms the rumor.
Rumor?
I was irritated that Skippy was not helping us keep focus.
Yes, when the assassination attempt on his older brother failed, there was a rumor that someone on Jerkface's security staff took a bribe to pass on the information. Before he fled the house in the bus, Jerkface shot three of his own bodyguards.
Okay, great. Can you leave the gossip for later?
Skippy harrumphed, hurt. That is intel, not gossip, Joe.
Fair enough, I admitted.
See, gossip is the rumor that his brother was banging one of the...
Later, Skippy, later.
Bilby, how are we doing?
We're all cool, man. You are standing on the bridge, talking and stuff. Sims is next to you, and...
No, that's... I closed my eyes, wincing. Sometimes Bilby's stoner personality was less than helpful. But he wasn't trying to murder the crew, so we had to count our blessings.
I meant, what is the status of the missile?
Oh, sorry about that. The missile is cool, too. You want to watch the feed from the nose cone sensor array?
Bilby presented himself as a slacker who indulged way too much in various substances. But under the personality he had adopted, he is a Maxulk's AI optimized by Skippy. He is smart. The missile came out of orbit at hypersonic speed, faster than an air-to-ground weapon was designed to fly, so Bilby had it scrub off speed on the way down, eroding the nose cone and temporarily degrading the sensor coverage, a reasonable trade-off for delivering the weapon over the target on time. That type of missile did not need to shed the nose cone and eject all the submunitions all at once. There was a door that could eject submunitions one at a time, so Bilby launched one, then another as a backup. Having launched its deadly payload, the missile itself kept going, passing over the target at supersonic speed and giving us a good view from above. While we didn't have audio, the video image was sharp. We saw the broken-down bus on a lonely, narrow dirt road. The land around there was rolling grasslands dotted with clusters of trees, like views I had seen of an African savanna. A herd of some antelope-like animal was running away from the road, and on the road were lizards, about 2 dozen of them. Our view was from overhead at about a 60-degree angle, and it was a lot of hats and heads without facial features. Until the sonic boom of the missile rolled over the road like thunder, all of the lizards looked up, and all of them flinched and cowered, ducking down in fear. All except one, the tallest by far. That had to be our target. I knew it even before the facial recognition system confirmed. That ugly lizard face looked up not in fear, but in disdain. As a warrior caste leader, he knew that it was the supersonic weapons you did not hear that was dangerous. His disdain was probably partly for us, partly for the poor asshole downrange who would be struck by the missile, and mostly for the lower caste women and children cowering in the dirt at his feet. We could see his mouth moving, shouting at them, and he kicked one of the women hard, shaking his fists. His anger, combined with the rolling thunder of the sonic boom, had the civilians hunkered down. That situation presented a nice, easy target for the submunitions. As instructed, Bilby had rendered the warhead inert, relying on its high subsonic speed to do the damage. It raced in at about 1,100 kilometers per hour, high enough off the ground that it did not give away its approach by causing the tall grass below to ripple. At the last second, Bilby guided it to duck down at knee level and turned to follow the road. The target turned suddenly, perhaps seeing a puff of dust on the road as the submunition raced along. It was unlikely he could see the submunition. It was no bigger than a tube of lipstick, and its chameleon wear matched the surroundings. If Jerkface suspected anything, he did not go so far as to drop flat on the ground. He did the opposite, looking up at the sky and shouting something we could not hear. It was thoughtful of him to present such an easy target. He was standing at least a meter taller than any of the civilians around him, with his head flung back and mouth open. The inert submunition flew in to strike the roof of his mouth, exiting at the top rear of his skull, and blowing out a jet of blood, bone, and the fermented shit he used for a brain. It was a nice touch by Bilby, having the blood and gore fountain up and away from the huddled civilians before his corpse slumped to the dirt. Have you ever overheard someone talking about you when they don't know you are there? It can be interesting if they say nice things, or terrible if they say what they really think. As a colonel, I have to evaluate the people under my command, and they get to give feedback on how I am doing my job. Skippy could tell me what people really think about me. I've always stopped him from doing that. Others, including Chang and Sims and Smythe, and Desai, when she was my executive officer, were always very open about my various and serious failings, so I didn't have to guess what they thought. Nor did I suffer the illusion that any of them thought I was a perfect leader. Why do I mention this? Because Jerkface on the ground was getting real-time feedback about his leadership. When his corpse splattered to the ground, the civilians ran away in terror. For about 10 seconds. Then, when no additional weapons struck, they must have figured they were safe. And they used the opportunity to show Jerkface exactly what they thought about his tough but unfair style of dictatorship. They kicked him. Hard. When that didn't do enough damage, they picked up rocks and threw them at him, or got down on their knees and bashed his body with stones until it was a broken and bloody mess. One of the children, had to be a boy, whipped out his ding-dong to take a whiz on the corpse when our missile went out of range and we lost the close-up view. "Gunny," I asked. Jerkface's people just gave an evaluation of how he did his job. "How did we do?" Her hands were shaking slightly from the anger that initiated the action and from the relief of seeing the target terminated. Relief and maybe a bit of disappointment that it all happened so fast. Jerkface hadn't even realized he died. She put both hands on the console, took a breath, and looked over at me.
"Satisfactory, sir."
"No, Gunny, it's not satisfactory. But it will have to do." She knew what I meant, acknowledging my statement with a lift of her chin. Nothing could bring back Aisha's mother or brother, or fill the hole in that little girl's heart. All we could hope for was to get a measure of solace that one particular asshole would not be hurting anyone ever again. Valkyrie continued its low arc over the inhabited part of the planet, and soon passed out over the ocean, our target list completed. When we were done, fires burned at isolated sites all over that world, long trails of black smoke blowing downwind. We did not strike the islands where the kidnapped people had been held. I had debated whether to pound those areas until the land no longer was above sea level, to erase the stain of their existence, so the people who suffered there would know they never had to worry about going back. When I explained my idea to John Yang, the guy from Fresno who had been held prisoner on one of those islands, he was horrified by my plan. People who died there were buried on those islands. Yang said they deserved to rest in peace. I agreed, so we left them alone. We also did not hit the new clan leader, whoever he was. It would have been counterproductive to take him out, especially as he had been so helpful to us by taking over responsibilities of the previous leader by shooting that loudmouth asshole in the head. We contacted him again, and his ugly face reappeared on the display. While we were bombarding his planet, apparently he had been in some sort of fight. His lips and the skin around one eye were swollen, and blood dripped from his mouth. Whatever the fight had been, he won, at least for the moment. This time we didn't mute the sound, and we could hear unintelligible shouting and cursing in the background. Holding up an index finger, I glared at him. I have one question for you. Did you get the message?
Yes.
He didn't follow that with any stupid questions or useless remarks, so maybe he was an upgrade from the guy he shot. Excellent. We are leaving stealth satellites in orbit to watch this place. The two islands where you held our people, they are off limits. No one goes there. No one flies overhead. Stay away. Far away. My purpose in making those islands a no-go zone was that someday we might return to dig up the graves and bring our people home. If you do not follow my instructions, tell your senior leaders of your clan that we will hunt them down and we will find them and we will kill every single one of them. Is that understood?
Yes. And yes.
He was smarter than the average lizard, understanding that I had asked two questions. Drawing a finger across my throat signaled Skippy to cut the transmission.
Pilot, lift us up to jump distance.
While we were accelerating to jump altitude, I contacted the Theranan squadron commander. Again, the audio was muted from their end. This is Colonel Joe Bishop of the United Nations Starship Valkyrie. I assume you listened to my conversation with the Kristang here. That message applies to you also. We are dropping our damping field. I signaled to Sims, and she made it happen. Get lost. Get out of here right now. If I see you again, your corpse had better be stone cold. There are many bad things to be said about the Theranan, but you cannot say they aren't able to take a hint. They jumped away the instant the strength of our damping field faded enough to make a jump practical. We also jumped away the instant we could. Damn it. That was the umpteenth planet I have visited, and I still have never been to a gift shop to get a snow globe.
I will settle for remembering the heartwarming image of smoke rising up all over that world.